Ilan Stavins is a noted cultural critic. One of his most recent books is called On Borrowed Words, A Memoir of Language. Stavins grew up in Mexico. He told Steve Paulson that he spoke several different languages.
My first language was probably Yiddish. And I say probably because in some way Yiddish and Spanish were a part of my childhood, and it's hard for me to say which of the two came first. I would speak Yiddish with certain members of the family. Yiddish, of course, is the Eastern European language, or the language spoken by Eastern European Jews. And Spanish would be used to communicate with neighbors and with friends that were not part of the realm of the Jewish community. For some reason, in my heart, I feel that Yiddish was there first, but certainly Spanish was more empowering.
In your book, the way you put it is, you say Yiddish was truly your mother tongue, whereas Spanish, the street language, was the one you used.
Right.
I had the sense that Yiddish had more emotional resonance for you.
It certainly did, and to this day I feel that a page in Yiddish speaks to me even before I read it, whereas a Spanish page or a page in Spanish is there and will always be there, and I will not develop an emotional reaction to that page until I start reading it.
Your grandmother left Poland to escape Hitler. Why did she settle in Mexico?
She was part of a wave of immigrants that originally wanted to come to the United States. But immigration quotas were closed, and so she and others in the boat were stationed temporarily in different islands of the Caribbean. Part of that family did move to the United States, and the other part just either settled in the Caribbean or moved to Veracruz, the Mexican port, and eventually to Mexico City. And for that reason, there was a sense when I was growing up that we were Mexicans more by accident than by choice.
Did you always feel like a minority in Mexico as you were growing up?
I always felt as a minority. In fact, I don't think I ever felt Mexican. I always felt Jewish. I don't think I became Mexican until I left the country and I moved to New York City, when people kept on stressing that I spoke English with a very heavy accent.
So in Mexico, you were considered Jewish, but in New York, you were considered Mexican.
Because in New York City, nobody could care less that I was Jewish. Yes.
Wasn't there another language you learned as well as you were growing up, Hebrew?
Hebrew was the language that was inserted in my education. It was in some way a religious language, of course. In my mind today, I see Hebrew as a vertical language and all the other ones as horizontal languages. By this, I mean horizontal languages that we human beings use to communicate with one another. But Hebrew, in my education, was stressed as the language with which we would be able to communicate with the divine, with God, a language to talk from here to the higher spheres of power or of immanence.
But what's so interesting, hearing you describe the place that these different languages occupied in your life, it's almost as if they had certain sectors. I mean, there was Hebrew, which meant religion, essentially. There was Spanish, which was everyday culture in Mexico. And then there was Yiddish, which was your family heritage.
This is in retrospect. I think that in some way I'm doing with my life what biographers do with their subjects. They look at a life and try to understand certain patterns and explain and reflect on those patterns. But are those patterns there while we are living the very moment? I doubt it. I don't think that I ever really pondered issues of language when I was growing up. The languages were simply there. I wasn't even aware that I was speaking two languages or three languages. This was an automatic behavior in me and in other kids around me. Today, I find myself doing something similar, not really being too conscious about it. I would speak on the phone with someone in English, turn around and talk to my kid in Spanglish, which is the mixture of Spanish and English, and then talk to a student in standard Spanish. I don't think that we, when using these different languages, are too conscious that we are traveling from one to the other.
Well, and I sense that you could make an even bigger argument, and that's your story is, in a sense, a microcosm of what's happening in many places in the world, this kind of mixing of cultures, in the sense that it's sort of a myth to talk about the purity of any one culture.
By all means, I think that we are, by definition, impure, perhaps even promiscuous in the way we connect different cultures, we connect different languages. There are more people in the world today that speak two languages and more than monolinguals.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
By all means. And the United States is truly an exception. And is the United States monolingual? That is a question worth asking. In the state of California alone, there are more Spanish language radio stations than in all of Central America together.
There are some people who see great political implications in what language you choose. And some languages are considered to be imperialist languages, for instance, in countries that have been colonized. If it's French or English that's spoken, that's seen as an imperialist language. You must have dealt with this kind of issue. Do you read politics into language that way?
I can't but read politics. I don't want to. I try not to get lost in the politics of language, but one can't really escape it. Think of Latin America today. The fact that a person in Argentina can communicate with someone in Colombia and those two can communicate with a third person in Cuba through the Spanish language is an astonishing act of colonialism. The Spaniards came, saw, and conquered. And they conquered through the crucifix, through weapons, and through the dictionary, although they didn't really bring dictionaries, they brought Bibles. It was in the words, or through the words, that they made those different countries become part of the Spanish Empire. Now, should we regret, should we leave with a sense of disbelief and unhappiness because we speak the language of the conquerors? Certainly not. Latin America today is the result of a cross-fertilization between Europe and the pre-Columbian cultures, and there's no reason to lose ourselves in a longing for one more than the longing for the other. We have two parents.
And certainly Spanish is what unites the whole concept of Latin America. I mean, of course, you have Brazil with Portuguese, but it's the Spanish language that really, I mean, take that away. And
what is there? Latin America is Latin America because of the Spanish language. Histories, national histories are different. Cuisines are different. The way people dance, the way people dream perhaps is different. But language is a single one with nuances or variations. And that is a happy occurrence as far as I'm concerned. But it also brings you forth to battlefields. Today, when discussions about bilingual education take place in the United States, the Spaniards in Spain are unhappy that the Spanish language is losing ground. And they side with the weak and say, we have to make efforts in order for American public schools to allow Spanish to exist. But they didn't side with the weak 500 years ago. They were the colonizers, not the conquered ones. And those are the twists of history that one has to laugh at, the ironies that eventually turn upside down.
Ilan Stavins is the author of On Borrowed Words, a memoir of language. He spoke with Steve Paulson.